Now we're going to talk about something a little bit different. We're going to talk about the science of relationships. This is a new book available on Amazon, Answers to Your Questions About Dating, Marriage, and Family. It's a collection of chapters written by 15 university researchers, professors across the nation, across Canada and the U.S., and I think Canada. One of them is here with us tonight, Professor Jennifer Harmon. Hi, Professor Harmon. How are you?
Hello, Dr. Laurie. Thanks for having me on your show.
It's such a pleasure. So do you have Canadian, I noticed on your website there are some Canadian researchers, many names that I'm familiar with.
Oh, yes. Lauren Campbell is one. We also have one in Israel. Ishkel Raffioli is another one. So, yeah, a little international.
So all over the place.
Yes.
That's great. So tell me how this book is different from all other relationship books out there.
Well, a few years ago, my co-authors and I were sitting around. We get together about every year to talk about our research and find ways that we can work together. And one day we thought, you know, it's a shame that all of the research we do just is only published in academic journals. Or we might get a little press release, but then no one
yes.
ever reads it.
So, right.
So mostly when people, when they want relationship advice, they might, you know, ask a friend, or they might go get a book that was written from one person's opinion. And we thought, well, why don't we, you know, combine kind of our knowledge and use the science that we're all very intimately familiar with to answer some of the questions that people have. And so we got to work, and this is what we came up with.
Well, it's like, to me, it's, I looked at it and I said, oh, that's like, 10 years of my show rolled into one book.
Exactly.
Know? Every one of those chapters is a topic for my show. And many of the people, who have written have been on the show, so talking about their research, which is kind of fun to see it all in one place.
Yes.
So that, yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of the more common questions that have come up? And how did you gather the questions anyway? How did you decide what was going in and what wasn't going in?
Well, all of us are either, some people have a clinical practice, others are professors, like myself. And so we sort of pulled our classes, we pulled people we knew, we pulled questions that we often get from various sources, and we kind of got them all together, and we picked ones that were sort of the most common themes that people gave us, and then we only tackled 40 of them in this book.
Imagine. So volume one, then when's volume two coming out?
We're already starting to brainstorm that. We actually developed the companion website in the meantime. We have a website that's part of this that we kind of now have been adding to, and that's sort of taken a life of its own.
Right.
And so we started, we'll probably at some point could do another volume, but this is our first stab at it.
Right. And it's quite nice to have a place where you can find, where it's articles written by professors and researchers, so you're getting it straight from, the horse's mouth, so to speak.
And it's sometimes tempting when we were writing it to not put our own opinion in. We all have our own opinions about things.
You can have your theories,
That'll be a different book. Our own opinions
right.
on that.
And let me give the website to our listeners. It is thescienceofrelationships.com. Lots of really great articles from actually many of my colleagues all over the place. So that's that's quite wonderful. So, all right, well, let's talk about a few things, if you don't mind. Can you talk about any of the things in the book, or how about talking about the ones you wrote about, because you probably know those best, but tell me about some of the research.
Sure. So some of my work, I'm interested in how our partners influence our perceptions and how our partners can get us to sometimes do things we wouldn't normally do.
Mm-hmm. Example?
So, for example, when we're in relationships, we always see the best in our partners, or we may see things in our partners that aren't true, but we like to believe them to be true.
So love is blind, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so some of the questions in my research I answer have to do with how that impacts sexual behaviors, which is very relevant for your show. Some of the questions that I was assigned to answer for the book were things such as, does sex lead to love, or does love lead to sex?
Mm.
Is one direction better?
And the answer is? What does the research say?
The answer is it could go either way. Obviously, if you have feelings of sexual attraction and those those feelings that go along with having sex lead to real feelings of bonding, and there's a real chemical reaction. You know, we know that there's a strong physiological component. It's like a reward system that's activated when we have sex, and so it makes you want to do it again and again and again.
And how does that affect the bonding experience in terms of the emotional attachment to that person?
Then over time, it enhances, by saying you want to do it again, it makes people then kind of want to repeat that behavior. It ensures that you're more likely to develop a bond through that action or through that behavior. And so then feelings start to develop as a result of that. And so sometimes if you look at the research says that for men, usually that would be an easier way for them to fall in love, or because it's more consistent with the gender role. And whereas for women, you know, sometimes the more consistent with their gender role is to you know, fall in love first, or label it as more of a commitment before you know, engaging in sex and labeling it as you know, as something you're making love rather than having sex. That's just some of the data. Obviously, there's a lot of variability. A lot of people have different goals for relationships. So.
What do you make of the 3-date rule? Like, is there some science to that?
I would say there's a little bit. I mean, I think there's a 3-date rule in terms of whether or not people are really deciding whether they should progress, and there's some physical attraction there, and trying to feel it out, whether or not sex happens on that date or not. I think there's probably at least an expectation that you see if there's some sort of chemistry to make it worth pursuing further.
Is there research that shows anything about why 3 dates, or that 3 dates is the optimal kind of number in terms of knowing if you should pursue or not?
One of our contributors actually on the website just answered that it's sort of, when you do a surveys of people about when they sort of expect that to happen, that seems to be a common thing that most people say, that's when they anticipate doing or becoming somewhat physical. And so I'm not sure if there's a golden rule, but it seems to be a normative sort of approach that people take.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk about many other different aspects. I guess you can decide. You'll pick out the different parts, if you'd like, of the questions, since we're clearly not going to get through 40 of them. But certainly we can get through a couple of them. So my guest tonight is Professor Jennifer Harmon. She is one of the authors, among 15 others, contributors to this brand new book out on Amazon.com, available on Amazon.com, The Science of Relationships, Answers to Your Questions About Dating, Marriage, and Family. The website is scienceofrelationships.com.
You're listening to Passion with Dr. Lori Petito on CJAD 800.
Tonight we're talking with Professor Jennifer Harmon. She is one of the contributors to this brand new book, a fascinating book, really, The Science of Relationships, Answers to Your Questions About Dating, Marriage, and Family. So, you know, where the research is done and answers some of these questions that we have, many of which we have discussed here on Passion, but it's really nice to see them all in one book. One question for you, Professor Harmon, and there was research that was just done recently on this, that the Dr. Robin Milhausen from Guelph University, who found that the longer women are in relationships, the less their sexual desire diminishes, but for men it stays the same. So, and you wrote a chapter pretty much, you know, will we stop having sex once we are married? So I'm wondering, does this back up her research, or tell me about that?
I think it's pretty true. I mean, you think about the demands. Well, I think, you know, especially if you add children to the mix and all the demands of caring for families, and how the daily stresses of life that people encounter in marriages and long-term relationships, those really obviously factor into one's sex life, the libido, energy, and whatnot. And so I think sometimes, you know, the it makes sense when you look at the data and sort of the demands that the people have over the course of their lifespan and how it would influence, you know, women sometimes more negatively. But you know, when children get older, you usually see, or when they go to college, you see increases in libido again.
That's right. And that's what the research shows, right? That as women get older, their satisfaction with sex increases, and it may not be in terms necessarily of quantity, but the quality and their desire for sex is still there even well into their 80s.
Absolutely, yes. And as women, other data show that as women as relationships are become longer term, the it's not so much the frequency, it's the quality of the sex that matters. And so, you know, happily married couples or people who've been together a long time rate their sexual life together actually quite satisfying, in fact more so than other you know, younger couples.
It's not right, and it's not measured by how much sex they're having, but it's in terms of their perception of the kind of sex that they're having.
Correct.
Right, and I think that's important for people to know this. And people panic when they see things like that. You know, oh my God, marriage means the end of my sex life. I'm never getting married. We hear this all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and I think also as long as couples can kind of keep things novel and exciting and kind of, you know, learn new things about each other, that kind of keeps the relationship fresh, you know. And you know, as many types of intimacy as you know there's, you know, there's the passionate and the emotional intimacy, but there's also like recreational intimacy and intellectual intimacy, you know, knowing how your partner thinks, and you know, those things you can kind of, you know, obviously keep cultivating your whole life. And so, you know, exploring all those different ways that you can get to know your partner, I think really adds to that too.
So have studies looked at all those different areas and the importance of those areas?
Yeah, and I think people don't give them as much weight as they probably should. I think as people get older, especially as health deteriorates, I think, you know, we don't know a lot about relationships as people really age, and you know, I think those things are probably going to be even more important when you take into account, you know, physical, you know, limitations and things that couples might face as they age.
So we actually need more research in that area now that we're the baby boomers, and you know, the younger generation of the baby boomers are now hitting, you know, getting to middle age or full in middle age. We need to do a little bit more research to see what is it that makes them keep going, and how they, the ones that are successful with, the ones that don't divorce, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, as people, you know, they get older, let's say they've been married for 40 years and their partner dies and now they're single again and dating. A lot of people, they don't know what to do, you know, they're in the market all over again. And so we don't really know as much about those types of folks who are re-entering the dating pool.
No, we're learning that as we speak, right? Mm-hmm. So do you know anything about, do you know any of the research done on the cheating gene? Have you looked into that at all?
There's been a lot of writing, especially, you know, in the book, the Canadian.
The Canadians are into that, huh?
Yeah, he wrote a few things in the book on cheating, and is it true that once a cheater, always a cheater? And you figure, you know, certain behavior patterns, you know, if you cheat and you get away with it, it's reinforced. And so sometimes, you know, certain behaviors are repeated over and over again. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's something genetic, you know, that's hard to say. Genetics are just one small component. Environment plays a huge role, too.
Right, but that is one component. But the media hooks into something like that, right?
Exactly.
We like, oh my God, there's a cheating gene, and off we go with it. And it's just one small part of the, you know, it doesn't take away the fact that we still have choice as a human being. But
Yeah.
It's interesting how it gets placed so that the general population can look at it as, you know, this is it.
Evidence for my, why I can do what I'm doing.
Exactly. So this is why, I guess, you know, your book kind of explores it in all of its, in all those possibilities, which is really good. You'll hang out with us for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Wonderful. We're talking with Professor Jennifer Harmon, one of the contributors of The Science of Relationships, Answers to Your Questions About Dating, Marriage, and Family, available on Amazon, the website, scienceofrelationships.com. You're listening to Passion on CJAD 800.
You're listening to Passion with Dr. Lori Battito on CJAD 800.
with Professor Jennifer Harmon, and she's a contributor of this brand new book, The Science of Relationships, Answers to Your Questions About Dating, Marriage, and Family. One last question for you. You wrote a chapter, Will My Husband Resent Me If I Make More Money Than He Does? What did you find from a science perspective?
Interestingly, they aren't resented but yet they don't feel very appreciated.
when who, the husband?
When the wife makes more money.
They don't feel appreciated.
Yeah, they don't feel as appreciated. They're not resented, so it's not negative, but the data, like large-scale surveys, kind of show that women feel like they're sort of, you know, it's okay, it's neutral.
So women are okay with it.
They're okay. The men are okay with it. It's not negative, but they don't oftentimes feel as appreciated as the other way around. When males make more money, males feel appreciated and whatnot.
So yeah, but the women don't.
Exactly.
So this turns the table. So there must be something to that then. Not contributing the same amount financially and somehow not being recognized for what you do contribute.
Yeah, and typically, you know, when that happens, women still end up doing the lion's share of the housework. The amount of effort at home still it doesn't turn the tables don't turn, the roles don't reverse exactly in the same way. So
even though she may be maybe working harder, maybe making more money, she's still doing more. So this really, and you talk about this in the book too, the whole inequality of the genders too. Like, is there such a thing as, you know, true equality? And I guess some of these studies show not really, unfortunately. Anyway, we'll direct people to the book, because lots of other questions in there and things to look at. Thanks so much for sharing your time with us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
All right. Thank our you. Pleasure.
Bye-bye
now. That's Professor Jennifer Harmon, one of the co-authors of The Science of Relationships, available at Amazon.com. And the website is scienceofrelationships.com. I will post that on the CJAD website. Just go to the Passion page. It will be there. And also the interview will be podcast on my show page.